Hello there. This is Mark Suddeth, HurricaneTrack.com. Welcome to the very first episode, the inaugural episode of Stories from the Hurricane Highway, the new podcast. I'm happy to be producing this and so glad you tuned in. Episode one here, I call this In the Beginning. This podcast, in fact, and the date for this is December 4th, 2019. These will be dropped once per week, every Wednesday, hopefully, but definitely once per week between now and May. And this podcast is not going to cover current events. This is going to be a look, a very intimate look behind the scenes of the stories that have shaped my career. And we're going to start at the very beginning and just move through the chronological history. So this could take a few years, which is good on the one hand, because this will give us something to do, especially between December and May of each year. This will be a seasonal thing that we will do in the off season of hurricanes. You know, hurricane season goes from June through November, and then I figured, hey, at the end of November, early December, let's start something different. And thanks to the support that I have received on Patreon, especially over the last year to year and a half, I am in a position to be able to do this original content, and you all are the benefactors of such, as this is available exclusively to our community of supporters, whether it be our patrons specifically on Patreon or our Hurricane Track insiders that have been subscribers to that service for a number of years. And eventually, by the way, we will talk about how all of that came to be. But that was in 2005. So hard to say exactly when we will get to 2005, you know, several episodes down the road. But back to my original premise here. And first of all, this is also going to be relatively unscripted. I do have a general outline of each show, each podcast episode, but it's just talking, you know, just sitting down and kind of like you're on the other side, just listening to me as if you were taking notes to write a book. Maybe you're a ghostwriter and you're going to write a book about what I've done. Well, this is how I would do that. That's what this podcast is all about. Stories from the Hurricane Highway. So no current event stuff. This is just history. So we're not going to do anything like I would talk about in the discussions. In fact, it's the off season, so there shouldn't be any hurricanes, right? All right, so the episode one here is called In the Beginning. Now, what in the world would make somebody who has intelligence of an above average level, hopefully, want to go into hurricanes on purpose, driving into them or fly into them as the hurricane hunters do? But that's another story from another group of people. Maybe they'll do a podcast one day. So what would make somebody want to do that, such as myself? And there's others that you know of out there, and eventually I will sit down with some of those people in future episodes as time permits, and they'll be part of this. These are going to be stories about people that I have encountered, events that have shaped everything, and it all goes back to this beginning. What in the world would drive me to do this, to drive anyone to do this? Well, I don't know. That's the short answer, all right? So, hey, thanks for tuning in and listening. This has been great. No, I'm just kidding. I don't know. I don't know what the mental mechanism is to go against all logic and drive into something that is inherently dangerous, that we know about in advance could be dangerous, whether it be firefighters that go into a burning building, police officers, the military, you know, anybody that's doing something that they know in advance is dangerous, but they do it anyway. But, you know, as we examine that question, why would somebody do that? It's not just weather, extreme weather, tornado chasers, hurricane chasers, whatever. It's also, you think about it in sports, like professional sports. There's only been a tiny, tiny handful, thank goodness, of storm chasers, and I use that term in a very general sense, that have been killed in the line of duty, so to speak. In football, professional football, I don't know the statistics off the top of my head, but it's got to be more than a dozen football players that have died as a result of concussion-related injuries, even after they have retired. They've committed suicide, whatever. That's a really big controversy. So, you know, more teachers have been killed in school shootings than storm chasers have been killed out in the field. So it's not as dangerous and crazy as people make it out to be. I don't know where that came from. Maybe it's just the human nature. Most people look at severe weather, they run away from it. People like me do not. So where did that get started? Well, as they say, in the beginning, I was born in North Carolina, in Durham, and I think that has a lot to do with it, where you grow up in terms of what weather influences you as a child. If you grow up in Minnesota, my condolences, but you know, it's a lot colder there. You know, are you going to become somebody that's interested in winter weather? You know, maybe you grew up in Rochester, New York. There's a big difference, you know, in those areas in the northern latitudes than if you grew up in Miami or in North Carolina or Houston, Texas, or wherever in Hurricane Alley. I guess that has a lot to do with it. So, you know, I was born in Durham in 1970, and North Carolina has four distinct seasons. I think that is the first clue as to why I am what I am, because as a kid, you experience those four distinct seasons. In the spring, we have a big severe weather season. There's even sort of a small tornado alley, if you will, in parts of North Carolina where tornadoes are more apt to form. It's not just random. And, you know, we have, well, not, the winters used to be much more severe. I say severe, but I remember as a kid, we'd have a lot more winter weather than we do now. And of course, we had hurricanes. And then in the fall, too, we had fall weather, but I was never much of a fall person. In fact, fall was always depressing to me because that meant the end of convective season, generally, the end of hurricane season, and it was kind of depressing, you know, until we got to winter. And now winter has become kind of depressing because it doesn't snow like it used to. But as you know, I now can go wherever I need to if I want to be in the snow. We'll cover that in a future episode as well. So, as a kid, grew up in North Carolina, moved from Durham down to New Bern at a very young age. And in New Bern, you have the Trent and the Neuse Rivers. My family and I lived on the river for a number of years, and that's where it really started. The down east North Carolina area, the Crystal Coast, that's where we would vacation, the Outer Banks, Rodanthe, Waves, Avon, Hatteras, Buxton, wherever. We went there as a child, my family and I, my mom, my dad, my brother, and myself. And you start learning about things. You learn about the lost colony and the settlement times and hurricanes and storms and the graveyard of the Atlantic. Now, just that term itself is really interesting as a child, is it not? I think it is. So you learn about these things at a young age. The graveyard of the Atlantic. Wow, that's really interesting. So I read about it, and that's not because of some supernatural force. That's a real thing, and it was because of storms and shoaling off of the Outer Banks, but mostly storms. The ocean turning against the early sailors and the attempts at settlement. Wow. And then what happens after that? Well, the graveyard of the Atlantic and the resulting loss to ships, etc., shaped early American history. Now you start to see where weather shapes American history. Wow, that's interesting too. So at a very young age, the seeds are planted because of where I grew up. And locally, New Bern had a hurricane history going back all the way to settlement times. And, you know, New Bern used to be the capital of North Carolina. Now it's in Raleigh. Tryon Palace was the literal capital area, and now it's up in Raleigh, of course, at the Capitol building. But New Bern was the focal point for hurricane history. You know, Beaufort, Atlantic Beach, Morehead City, and of course, as I mentioned, the Outer Banks. And so at a very young age, I got the bug, and I did as much as I could. You remember these things called encyclopedias? Now it's called Google, or whatever you use, and the world is at our fingertips. But back then it was an encyclopedia, and I would open it up and read about hurricanes, tornadoes, volcanoes. I was a science nerd. I loved it. And I did everything I could to read about it at an early age. And it also didn't hurt that my dad owned a sailboat, and we would go sailing from time to time. And of course, if you're going to go sailing, you have to know about the weather. And he, being an educated man, taught me what he knew. I learned about thunderheads. You know, cumulonimbus clouds is what they are technically called. But, you know, we, as a kid, my brother and I, oh, those are thunderheads, you know, talked about severe weather. He had a hurricane tracking map each summer that would be on the wall of the kitchen. And I just thought it was fascinating and, you know, kind of scary at the same time. What are these big things called hurricanes? We had never been through one. Remember, this is now in the 70s, and we were in this least active era of hurricanes compared to now because of the cold cycle of the Atlantic multi-decadal oscillation, things that we now know about that were just starting to be studied by people like Dr. William Gray, Dr. Bill Gray, the former, the late, well, I guess he's still Dr. Gray, but the late Dr. Gray, you get what I'm saying. His work was just starting in the 70s to understand this stuff. And that's a big part of it, just growing up where I did, learning about it from books, from other people, my dad, etc. And so that has to be the root. You know, I can't explain it any better than that. I think that's the cause of it. There's just something that draws me in inherently to learn more about hurricanes specifically. But I had a big interest in weather as a whole. Now, the very earliest hurricane experience at all that I can remember was 1979 and Hurricane David. And all I remember is my family getting ready for it. Probably saw some stuff about it on the local news. I'm sure it was talked about on the radio. These are memories that are somewhere deep inside. But I definitely remember my dad getting supplies and getting ready in case it came up the coast, stuff like that. Him tracking it on a paper tracking chart. So Hurricane David, when I was 9 years old, is probably the first memory that I have of a hurricane affecting my life on a personal level. We probably had to get the boat out of the water. Things like that. You know, I don't have any specific recollections, but these are just those quick flashes in your memory bank that you can just get a glimpse of those things. And David was the one, Hurricane David, 1979. It eventually made landfall after being a very powerful hurricane over portions of the Caribbean. It came up the southeast coast and kind of died out, etc. But it never made direct landfall as a hurricane in New Bern. And so there was this kind of, you know, rise up of like all this commotion and talk about it, and then nothing happened. Oh, okay. So next, several years later, Hurricane Diana in 1984. Now, I was in the eighth grade that year at a middle school, of course, in New Bern, and my science teacher, Mr. Maggiolo, I think that's how it's pronounced. I have to go look it up. It's either Maggiolo or Maggiola, but I remember his first name was Lou. He was a great science teacher and was very much into the weather. So he's not just a teacher to earn the paycheck. He was really into it, and that was the next puzzle piece. I very much know that. That his excitement about the weather really rubbed off on me. And when Hurricane Diana in September 1984 was coming up the coast, it formed from an old frontal boundary and was moving up the southeast coast. That was the big turning point for me. And he was tracking it in the classroom. You know, would have the NOAA weather radio back when there was a real person that would read the weather. Now it's a synthesized voice. I don't know if you know that, but it's true. And so, you know, you would hear this voice come on and they would have that different timbre in their voice. It's just the way the radio did it, where, you know, Hurricane Diana, advisory number 4, whatever. And it just had this weird, you know, science fiction feel to it. Something ominous is coming, something scary, something we all have to take notice of, but it's real. It's not an alien invasion. It's not War of the Worlds. It's not Star Wars. You know, it's real. You know, and we should be a little concerned, but nobody's panicking. It's not nuclear war. You remember, we're still in the Cold War era, the latter years of it in 1984. And that was, you know, part of what I grew up with. The threat of the Russians and First Strike and, you know, the whole idea. Remember, there was a movie that came out called The Day After, and it was about nuclear war in Lawrence, Kansas was the focus there. Jason Robards was in it. The Brits made one called Threads. This was kind of the modern era ending part of the Cold War, and that kind of loomed over a lot of us. There was the Libya situation in the Middle East in 1985, I think it was, and this is all important because there's a distinction between fearing something like that, like nuclear war, that the generation before mine had to deal with even more so, obviously pre-1970, you know, with the Cuban Missile Crisis, etc., and in the age of the atom, that is a big problem, and I would have nightmares about it, and, you know, we all grew up with that, those of us born around that time frame and many decades before. I don't know how the generation now looks at things. Maybe it's terrorism. Who knows what else? Maybe fear of my iPhone not working. That's more weighing on people's minds than nuclear war. But the distinction, and I know I'm off on a little bit of a tangent here, but the distinction between worrying about something like that and worrying about a big hurricane coming, the nuclear war thing was always like in the back of my mind. It would give you this fear in the pit of your stomach. Hurricanes were exciting. Nuclear war, not exciting. Hurricanes, exciting. You understand that? That's what I'm getting at here. So, as Mr. Maggiolo plotted that hurricane over the days, and we listened to the NOAA weather radio, it got closer, it got stronger, and then he started feeling concerned, and we could see that. I don't know which of my classmates also noticed it, but the concern, not only as a science teacher that he knew what was coming, but also as a father, a husband, and a homeowner. And now that I am all of those things, I can certainly see where he was coming from, believe me. But I could see that even as a 13-year-old. And so it changed a little bit from, wow, this is really exciting. There's this hurricane coming. We might get out of school. Maybe that's what it was. Hurricanes meant no school. Who knows? You live up in the Hudson Valley or wherever, no school from snow. Woohoo! Right? Hurricanes means no school down south. Maybe that's what it was. But he was on top of it, and his concern about what would happen, and then he talked about it, how you could hear the trees cracking, and he really gave a vivid description as to what we could expect if Diana, now approaching Category 4 intensity, as it came up towards the Carolina coast, if it made landfall around New Bern, that it would be a really, really big problem. So the excitement kind of tempered a little bit to more concern. And I certainly remember asking my parents about it. I can't remember specifically what we talked about, but it was a big deal, this Hurricane Diana. Now, there's something else that happened around that same time that's also pivotal in this whole story, especially chapter one here, as we call it, in the beginning, right? What else happened in the early 80s? We had the advent of two very important technological media breakthroughs, Turner Broadcasting and then the Weather Channel. Both of those are also giant influences on how I became who I am today. Why? Because 24-hour weather was now at my fingertips. I didn't have a computer. A good friend of mine who it does all of our programming for the website, etc. His name is Jason. He had a computer, one of those early day personal computers. What was it back then? Probably a Commodore 64 or something. Maybe that was later. Anyway, we didn't have the internet. We didn't have computers. Maybe he did. I don't remember. But we had the Weather Channel and we had CNN. And the Weather Channel, of course, was, for me, like today's Facebook and social media addiction. Ask my parents. Trust me. When the tropical update came on with John Hope, you better not be in my way at 10 before the hour. It came on at around, 10 before the hour, 50 minutes past the hour, 10 before the hour, whatever way you want to look at it. If you were in the way between me and the television, you better move, because I would knock you down trying to get it to the channel. It was like channel 41 or whatever on cable, and I would watch the Weather Channel with John Hope and Jim Cantore. There was a guy that used to be in our local market from Eastern North Carolina named Mark Mancuso. He went to the Weather Channel. The Weather Channel siphoned off a bunch of local talent as John Coleman and others began that network. I think it was 1982 that it came into being. And Mark Mancuso left and went to the Weather Channel. So these are all people that I remember learning from. And of course, Cantore is still today. John Hope passed away several years ago. But I learned a lot. And that it was on 24 hours, I'm telling you, that was awesome. And it fed my obsession. But it's not just feeding the obsession. I really did learn a lot, because the Weather Channel was much more than just a news outlet. It was also an educational portal, because these on-camera meteorologists, that's one thing that Ray Ban and John Coleman and the people that put the Weather Channel together did a great job of, and they still do today, is these are all certified meteorologists. It's not just a bunch of news people, and there's nothing against news people, but it's not, all due respect to Al Roker and Willard Scott, as far as I know, they are not degreed meteorologists. These were not weather personalities. These were meteorologists, and you could see that. It translated through, and to a 13-year-old weather geek and science nerd, I learned a lot. So there we were, plotting Diana, all of us together, my class, for those that cared, my teacher, my family, the Weather Channel feeding that information, some of it on CNN, of course. And then, of course, they would send people out into the field, both CNN and the Weather Channel, and being able to see that coverage all the time, whenever, was awesome. Now, Diana did something very important. It made landfall as a weakening storm down in the Wilmington area, Cape Fear region, where I live now, and brought some impacts to New Bern, heavy rain bands, some wind, but not a direct hit landfall. So that hole still remained, right? You understand that? That, what is the big deal? That question never got answered still. So we had David in 1979, Diana in 1984, close, no cigar. It's like all this hype, all this buildup, and nothing happened compared to what we know now can happen, right? So I think that drove more of my passion. Like, oh, what is this all about? What is the, I want one to hit, is kind of what it came down to. I saw the images on TV. I thought, man, that'd be really neat to go through. Just hope it doesn't mess up my house, right? Be careful what you wish for. So that's another puzzle piece. The Weather Channel, CNN, etc. Another one, in the early formative years of my life, the North Carolina Aquarium at Pine Knoll Shores. And you might be wondering, what in the world? Jay Barnes, author of North Carolina's Hurricane History, as well as Florida's Hurricane History, was the director of the aquarium for a number of years. He retired several years ago. And I think it was him that was responsible. I'd have to go look, but I know that he was director there for a long time, and it may have been his programming that brought this film to the aquarium each August called A Lady Called Camille. It was a documentary about Hurricane Camille in 1969. That is another big pivotal moment, and actually moments plural, because as a child, backing up a little bit, surely in the late 70s, early 80s, somewhere around there, I can't remember the first year, those memories I just can't seem to, what year was it? I can't remember, but it was definitely early on. We would go to the aquarium, and I'd have to look and see when the aquarium was built and all that. Maybe if I ever do a book, we'll put that in there. But I know we went to the aquarium at Pine Knoll Shores, and they would show this film in the auditorium, and it was literally a film. And it was all about a lady called Camille. And Well, that was the title of it. Sorry, I got sidetracked there. It was all about Camille. I was thinking about it. I had a flashback. And it was literally a motion picture, whatever it was, probably 16 millimeter, you know, and they would show it on a reel, a reel-to-reel motion picture projector and on a movie screen. And that is on YouTube. I highly recommend you YouTube search A Lady Called Camille. I watched that as a child at the aquarium, and it really resonated with me because, again, it was this story about a legend that was a hurricane, and it was this really big deal in American history. It killed over 250 people. That legendary footage, very little of it. Some of it was at night, and it's that old film. You know, it's grainy, dark, almost like that found footage genre of movies that started coming out in the late 90s, like the Blair Witch Project. Shaky, grainy, dark, and it makes it more mysterious. You see, that's the thing here. I think that's what we're getting down here to the core of the apple, as they say. It's the mystery of the hurricane. What we don't know about them, that they're shrouded in darkness a lot of times. They make landfall at night. They're scary in some sense. Got to get some water here. All right. they leave a lot to still be learned about. And that film really embodied that. Whoever produced that, it was a civil defense project. It was so well done because it was like a movie, but it was real. You know, all those images that are in that film that stay in my head even today haunted me, but in a good way, if that makes any sense. And so anytime we got to go to the aquarium and I saw that film, oh my gosh, it was like, wow. And that fed my yearning to learn more about hurricanes even more. And all of those together in the late 70s, early 80s, really was the start. Then, 1985, another hurricane, Hurricane Gloria, out of the deep tropics. Very powerful hurricane. Weather Channel on top of it. It was headed towards North Carolina once again, and now I'm 14 years old, and it's like, here we go. And, you know, maybe this time, you know, and I really wanted it to hit. I thought, I got to see what this is all about. Everybody's talking about it. I remember going to some, I do remember this. I was at some church-related activity with my youth group at somebody's house, and they had it on either the local station or the Weather Channel, and there was that crawl at the bottom of the screen with information about evacuation centers, closings, whatever. And I just remember, again, that sort of tense feeling that I felt, our parents felt, and the community felt. Ugh, another big hurricane coming. We're a little bit more into the modern age now. It's everywhere. It's ubiquitous. CNN, the Weather Channel, local media, you know, everybody's talking about it. And another letdown, because what happened, it went over the Outer Banks. Now, had I been out on the Outer Banks, I could have been in the eye of that thing, but not so lucky. Had I been in Long Island, where, interestingly enough, many, many other meteorologists out there and weather geeks got their start also because of Gloria. And who knows, maybe there's a podcast or a book out there waiting to be written by one of those folks. But it did eventually go across parts of Long Island and on into New England from there. Gloria, 1985, another one that I thought, all right, this is... And so that, you know, those two seasons, 84, 85, really put the foundations. You know, if that was the, that would be literally the ground floor put in. And then something like a big deviation happened in my life. In 1986, we up and moved to Las Vegas, Nevada. I kid you not. My father was in public administration, and he had a job opportunity, and it was out west, which we had actually visited, I think, in 1985 as part of a Civitan convention. Civitan is a public service organization. Like Rotary Clubs, you have Civitan, Lions Club, whatever. And the Civitan convention was in Vegas. I think it was 85, and we all went out there, and man, I was hooked. Not because of necessarily Vegas. I mean, yes, it is remarkable, even in the 80s, but it was the weather out there. Of course, it really got my attention. We went in the summer of 85 for this convention, and there was thunderheads over the mountains, and you know, the monsoon I now know of as the monsoon was setting up, and we had a dust storm one night. I remember that. And we stayed at the MGM Grand Hotel. I do remember that. And it just, you know, we were there in 85. I don't know if that's just like part of, like, you know, had we not been there in 85 for that convention, would we have ended up moving? But there's a subset to this. Yes, we ended up in Vegas. Guess where we almost ended up? And this just shows you, man. It's like, oh, Mark was going to be in weather one way or another. You can clearly see it was my destiny, as they say. Sometimes I do feel like I'm in the Truman Show. Remember that with Jim Carrey? And one way or the other, Christoph, the guy that directed the Truman Show in the movie, you know, directs Truman and keeps him on this island. And, it just seems to me sometimes too many things happen to line me up right where I needed to be, because also in, I think it was 1986 earlier, somewhere around that period, 85, 86, we almost moved to near Oklahoma City, Yukon, the Moore, Yukon area. I kid you not. He had a job offer there, almost accepted, did accept, I can't remember. But we went out looking for houses. I mean, we were almost there. And we were like, my parents, luckily, changed their mind. Didn't want my brother and me. Remember in the 80s, the economy was depressed and, you know, the oil industry was dying out there. It just wasn't, something didn't feel right. Probably because we knew many years down the road that several F5 tornadoes were going to go through that area, and who needed to go through that, right? So... fate, divine intervention, whatever you want to call it. I don't know. We didn't move to Oklahoma. Came real close, though. So instead, 1986, boom, we move out to Las Vegas, Nevada. And that's where I went to high school. And throughout those years, 3 years, we were there from 86 through 89. I stayed on top of the weather, more learning about microclimates, you know, how the mountains out there influence the weather, the monsoon. You know, snow up in the Wasatch. I started skiing. And, you know, as a teenager, you know, became interested in girls a lot more. Developed a deep passion for music, which I'd always had as a kid. Thought I was going to be the next Richard Marx or Steve Perry, somebody like that, or Phil Collins, you know, early 80s influences, mid 80s. I played piano, keyboard, and so forth and so on. And Vegas was the place for that, man. I thought, all right, you know, this weather thing, yeah, it's a hobby. I still watch the Weather Channel, but, you know, between girls, high school, music, whatever, I played soccer, I was athletic. Weather was just more of a hobby. And I really started focusing more on my music. Had taken piano lessons all as a child, of course. But I bought a synthesizer. My parents did for me once we moved out there to Vegas. And I thought, this is it. I am going to have a career in music. And Vegas is where I'm going to launch it. You know, it was weird, but that's true. So those 3 years, 86 through 89, kind of lost an interest a little bit in hurricanes. There wasn't that many. You know, certainly none that influenced the desert Southwest that I can remember. Some of them do come up out of the Pacific, as you know. But, no, I don't remember any major hurricane issues out there from the Pacific. I do remember Gilbert in the Caribbean affecting Jamaica and then the Yucatan and eventually northern Mexico, South Texas, etc. The Weather Channel, of course, covering that. So I was tuned into that a little bit. I do remember visiting the National Weather Service, Las Vegas, and meeting with somebody out there talking about Pacific hurricanes a little bit. This was like probably when I was a junior in high school, trying to figure out what I was going to do for a career. I did go out to Nellis Air Force Base and met with a recruitment officer and was immediately denied, well, you won't have a career in the military because, why? Well, it turns out I'm deaf in my left ear, well, about 80%. I had that as a child and can't be in the Air Force if you're deaf. That just doesn't work apparently. So, because I thought if I go in the Air Force, I could be a hurricane hunter and study meteorology in the Air Force. Honestly, you know, what am I going to do? As a high schooler, you start trying to figure that out. I had music. That was a big pull. And, you know, like I said, girls. Okay, sure. As a high school boy, why not? And the weather. And music was really starting to win out. And I bought more keyboards and thought, you know, I'm going to develop this career. So, graduated high school, it's time to get ready for college, and a job, and Vegas is tough. And the Nevada, everything about it out there, there's only so much of that you can take in public administration. A job opened up back east, unbelievably, in Wilmington, North Carolina, for my father. So we went and packed up in June of 89. And I got my high school diploma at Thomas and Mack Center on the campus of UNLV. And went to Clark High School, got it, left, and here we are. Summer of 1989, Wilmington, North Carolina. Came by train, all of our stuff shipped out, you know, on a big truck, blah, 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 and here we were. And what did I do? Immediately, right back to the Weather Channel, tropics. Picked up right where I left off. And as fate would have it, what would happen? Hugo, September 1989. Now, before that, very important, I really was focusing, yep, I'm going to be a musician. Weather will be my hobby. Music will be my career. I had a job. I'm like 18 years old at this point, and I financed it. Or my parents helped me. I can't remember how it worked. I guess they probably helped me. And I bought a studio. A music studio, synthesizers, like high-end stuff, like what bands would use, Van Halen, Richard Marx, Steve Perry, you know, professional synthesizers, and, you know, learned how to use them and create music. I sang, not very good, obviously, because here I am, but I thought I was going to make it, right? Who didn't think they were going to be the next Paul McCartney or whomever, right? Especially guys, and you know, girls follow it too. You're going to be the next Whitney Houston or whomever. And that's what I thought I was going to do, seriously. So Hugo comes along, and it's like that pull of the universe again. You know, it's so weird. Hugo's coming. It's late September. It's all anybody's talking about, and this sucker is a whopper. And it looks like it's going to just take out Southeast North Carolina, maybe Northeast South Carolina. The Weather Channel's all over it. People are out in the field. Dennis Smith, I remember him. He was down in the Charleston area. I don't remember where Ken Torrey was. CNN was on it. They had a young chap, well, back then we were all young, named Jeff Flock, CNN's version of Jim Cantore. Jeff covered hurricanes for CNN, as well as Jim Cantore did and does for the Weather Channel. And I remember watching all of them and seeing the hurricane coming. I was older. wiser. I had a car, and I drove down to Carolina Beach, all the way down actually to Keery Beach in southeast North Carolina here in New Hanover County, and went down to this area called The Rocks. And if you live in this area, you know what I'm talking about. And I remember the waves coming in were incredible. And the wind was already picking up, and, we're under a warning. It's, all hell is breaking loose. In town, it's a really big deal. Hugo looks like it's going to be historic. And it looked like it was coming right for Wilmington. And I went down, checked it out, and I remember being there. They started closing everything down. They came around, everybody get out. The police over there, loud speaker, evacuation, time to go. They were closing down the island, that the access south of Snow's Cut Bridge. So I got a glimpse of it, was in awe of it, went back home and, dealt with it at the house with my family. As it turns out, the emergency management director for New Hanover County, Dan Summers, at the time, lived on my street. My dad, who was in public administration here, in the mental health system, that's part of the emergency support functions. Why, I would learn about all of that later. Isn't that interesting how it all comes full circle? So he knew Dan. They had the hospital, mental health system, nursing homes, fire departments. Those are all called ESFs, emergency support functions. And anyway, I remember my dad telling me, oh yeah, Dan lives on our street, blah, blah, blah. So, wow, that's cool. So Hugo, as we know, goes in around midnight. The center comes in over Charleston. The eye moves over Charleston. And I had wished so badly that I was there. Really did. Of course, I couldn't be for obvious reasons. It was close, though. I heard the pine trees in our front yard in Pine Valley, aptly named, cracking that night. You could hear them cracking, the creaking, the cracking, whatever. It was the closest encounter yet, but still no cigar. It didn't make landfall in Wilmington. I was like, ugh. Saw the damage. It was awe-inspiring. It really was, and it really motivated me to learn more than ever before. Now, coincidentally, at that same time, I was enrolled at the community college here, beginning my college career. I didn't exactly stay to the books when I was in high school, and so my grades were not right to where they should be to go to a four-year school just yet. So I got into Cape Fear Community College and started in the fall of 1989. Met a guy there named Todd, can't remember his last name, and Hugo came and went, and I remember he and I, in October, just a month later, drove down, like in the middle of the night for some stupid reason, to South Carolina, out on the Isle of Palms and everything, and there were still houses in the street. And it's like going to Mexico Beach a month after Michael. And even going down there that night, we could see, on the way down Highway 17 in South Carolina, the tree damage. It was the first study that I had ever done was Hugo. Like, we didn't go down as just like, oh, let's go see it. It was, we had a purpose. And we went down at night. I can't remember why on earth we would go down at night, but we did. And it was the science, the scientist in me coming out again. The meteorologist in me, the geographer. And those are all real things. You don't have to have a degree in them to kind of aspire to be those things. You know what I'm saying? Like at an early age, if you're going to be a doctor and you see something and you go, oh, it was the doctor in me coming out. Same kind of thing. The scientist in me was coming out. It was not just gawking at the damage. It was that pull. And I remember thinking about seeing all that damage. Wow, what if we had had instruments down here to measure the wind that knocked down all those trees? And they were snapped off 30% of the way up the trunks and millions of them. And that was a really big part of that hurricane in the Francis Marion Forest. And then the surge that could push houses into the street, and they were still there in October. What if we had had a way to film that using like a camera that we could leave behind? I remember saying that to this guy, Todd. Honestly, I really did. I said that, you know, because we knew, yeah, there's no way you could just sit out here and film it yourself. You'd be killed. I was like, man, you know, that'd be cool if you like left a camera behind and had some way to record all this, because there were video cameras in 1989. Of course there were. They were huge and cost you a kidney to buy one, but they existed. And, you know, because I thought, you know, that would be amazing to film, but the heck if I'm going to stand out here and do it, you know, you'd be killed. They had a 20-something foot storm surge, McClellanville. You know, a lot of people almost died at that evacuation shelter at Lincoln High School. Those stories came out. And again, it pulled me. And I thought, maybe the weather is something I want to really focus on more, because I was back in Southeast North Carolina and right where I had, where I should be. You know, it's like, you're back. This is where you should be, and this is where it's going to happen. And so that, all the way through from, you know, 1970 to 1989, those formative years, is the beginning. And Hugo was the one. Like, if everything else was almost there, all those puzzle pieces, Hugo was the last puzzle piece, period. Once that was in place, boop, you know, you pop it into place. You know that feeling when you put that last puzzle piece in of satisfaction? Ah, it's finished. The puzzle of the path to what I was going to eventually do as a career was finished. Just that one puzzle. Remember, in this metaphor, there's a lot of puzzles we're going to do. You never just do one puzzle in life, right? I mean, literally, you do many puzzles if you're into puzzles, and this was the first one. And it was complete because of Hugo, because of the Weather Channel, because of me going down and seeing it, the aftermath, in person. And even though I was enrolled at a community college, doing my basics, you know, English 101, Psych 101, blah, 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 you know, I thought I was going into the music curriculum. Eventually, I would transfer to UNC Wilmington, but that was the start. That was it. And beyond that, and by the way, just so you'll get an idea of where are we going with this on this episode, we're going to go all the way up to about 1995, and that'll be the end of the first episode. After Hugo, not much, you know, 1990, hurricanes here and there, nothing major. Did pretty well at school, doing okay, whatever. Continuing learning my music, whatever, my synthesizers. Thinking, yeah, I'm gonna do something, you know. And 1991, we had Hurricane Bob right offshore. Okay, here we go. Maybe this one will do it. Nope, didn't. Too far offshore, went up into New England. You know, thought about going after that one. Ah, okay. Yeah, you know, still didn't go chasing yet, as they call it. I had a Toyota Corolla, by the way. That's very important to point out. My parents bought me a Toyota Corolla, a 1982 Corolla, in Las Vegas. We had it shipped or driven back. I don't remember how the heck we got it to Wilmington, but that's what I drove, a little Toyota Corolla. So, no, I'm not going hurricane chasing in something like that. 1992 was the beginning of the next puzzle. Okay, if the first puzzle was, you know, the foundation of putting Mark's passion together and his career path, the second puzzle began the first piece with Andrew, 1992. Andrew came along in August of 1992, and I was now at UNC Wilmington. I transferred from the community college. Actually, I did this in 1991. Enrolled at UNCW as a music major. We have a music department. It's not widely known and world famous or anything, you know, like Juilliard or ECU. And ECU does have a great music program, but, you know, Juilliard, everybody knows Juilliard. But we had a music program nonetheless, and I was in it, learning music theory, which was boring. I wanted to learn how to be Phil Collins or Steve Perry. Teach me how to sing like Steve Perry. Ugh, it was frustrating. Trust me. And I didn't do well because of that. Very impatient, you know, like Yoda. You know, you need to learn patience. I'm not going to do any Yoda impressions, but as a young learner, as a young Jedi in the world of music, I was too impatient, absolutely. And what teenager or young adult wouldn't be, right? So 1992, I'm at UNCW, and Andrew's coming, and I thought maybe I could go down to South Florida for this one. And it's interesting because I still lived at home, going to UNCW, saved on having to be at a dorm so I could just live at home. And by living at home, your parents still have that, well, while you're living under my roof, you're not doing such and such. And they wouldn't let me. I mean, there wasn't like a big fight or anything, but no, you're not going to Miami for Hurricane Andrew. That's not happening. That's basically how that went. Not to mention that I didn't have any money to do so and whatever, right? It was a thought. I entertained the idea of going to South Florida for Andrew. I really did. It was probably a very fleeting moment, but it was there nonetheless. Also, in August of 1992, I met who would become my wife, Rebecca, at college at UNCW. Just entering that into the mix here. Because part of this series, you're going to learn, there's going to be some levity, we're going to have some good times with this, but you're also going to hear some of the hardships, so to speak, of how it is to leave your family and go to a hurricane. Speaking of Steve Perry, the song Faithfully, there's the line in there about loving a music man ain't always what it's supposed to be, you know, about life on the road, etc. Well, I never ended up being a music man, not as a career, as you know, duh, but it's kind of the same thing. You know, when you're on the road, it's hard. We'll get to that. So I met my wife, Rebecca, that year, 1992. Andrew's coming. Again, it's that big pull. But this time, I was even more invested in it than ever before. And the Weather Channel, CNN, on top of it, of course, it makes landfall. We now know it was a Category 5. It went into Louisiana. The remnants passed over southeast North Carolina several days later, and it really drew me even more than ever before. Like, Hugo was, you know, wow. Now, Andrew was pivotal in United States history. He had a lot of blowback from people after Hugo about the FEMA response, etc. Andrew was even more of that, as you recall. And for the first time, I got to see how a hurricane influenced politics. Because the election was in 1992, and the way that the Bush administration handled Andrew may have influenced that just a little bit. You know, I don't do politics, but you remember the whole FEMA thing, and it was like, the response, and that matters. It does when you have a state like Florida that has a lot of electoral votes to be cast, and South Florida in particular. And what happened in 1992? Well, Bill Clinton won, right? And that ushered in a program through FEMA called Project Impact, which we'll get to later, way later down the road. But I saw that for the first time that I could remember. I remember a little bit during Hugo, but boy, it was very prevalent in 1992 with the Bush administration, okay? First Bush, right? Bush Sr. And so that was really interesting to me that Andrew was more than just a weather phenomenon. It crippled South Florida, the Air Force base down there, Homestead, very close to Miami. The stories that came out of Andrew made it even bigger than life, once again, kind of like Camille, as did Hugo. But there was something about Andrew. And some of those stories, one of which was the story of Stan Goldenberg, the scientist from Hurricane Research Division, who was on David Letterman and was in a National Geographic special. He's been featured in numerous interviews. Google him, Stanley Goldenberg, Hurricane Andrew. Google him, and you'll see. He was... He's a scientist, still is, at HRD, and his wife was due to have a baby when Andrew was coming ashore. You may have heard about this guy. And they delivered, he had to leave her and the baby at the hospital. The baby's name is Pearl. And he went back to his house with his children and some other family members and neighbors, I think it was. And his house was destroyed. The walls collapsed, and they stayed under a small cave, if you will, of the wall and the refrigerator, and they recorded all of this. And it is an amazing story. And I thought, wow, that's really remarkable. This scientist was, and he flies into the hurricanes for NOAA, by the way, and did back then, I think, studies hurricanes. And his house is taken out by a hurricane. Something about that was really compelling to me. There's also the Brian Norcross story and what he did at the TV station in Florida, helping people, staying on the air, and being the voice that kept people in touch and maybe even saved lives. And they made a made-for-TV movie about him in 1993. So Andrew was big. It was another big deal. I learned a lot about it. Documentaries were made, and it did something that really changed everything. And that is, it motivated me so much that I looked into other courses at UNC Wilmington. You know, you get to choose electives, right? Not just core music stuff. And they had Introduction to Meteorology. Professor's name was Rudy Kiefer, a German fella, Dr. Kiefer. I signed up for it, and that was the key. I thought, oh, you got to be kidding me. You know, my girlfriend, Rebecca, my parents and everybody, oh, yeah, you got to take that, man. It's weather. Meteorology. You'll probably love it. I did. And Dr. Kiefer was the modern version, or whatever you want to call it, the next version of my eighth grade science teacher, because he was more than just a professor. He saw my passion for the weather, and he engaged me with it. It was just like a major connection. And I took that meteorology course, I think, you know, so Andrew was 1992. I took that meteorology course either in 93 or 94 and really was not doing too well with music. Again, mainly because of my impatience. I wanted to be an overnight success and become a pop star. Wasn't happening. So I took this meteorology course, talked to Dr. Kiefer about my struggles in music. UNC Wilmington does not offer meteorology. My grades and everything were okay, especially in anything not related to music. And that's surprising, isn't it? I was not doing well with music because we literally butted heads. So I applied to NC State and looked at their meteorology program. I was going to transfer, got accepted. Mississippi State University, I looked at that, and broadcast meteorology, you know, and as they say, I think a big influence was I had a girl. You know, I wasn't going to leave my girlfriend, Rebecca. So I decided, oh, UNC Wilmington has a geography program. I can get a degree in geography. And I've said this on a couple of my updates this year. I finally figured it out. Geography is to meteorology like being an Episcopalian is to being a Catholic. It's almost there, but not quite. You know what I mean? It's like being a PA, a physician's assistant, versus being a doctor, a full medical doctor. Very close, but not quite. Meteorology is a tremendous amount of math and physics and weather forecasting, of course. Geography is like a slimmed down version, especially if you go into physical geography like I did. It's a slimmed down version of meteorology. It really is. You learn about a lot of meteorology. You know, so I am like a PA would be to a doctor. So I followed that and I nailed it. I switched out of music in 1994, went into geography, studied hurricanes as my focus. My professors in my curriculum embraced that. And I freaking nailed it. All of my projects, I took statistics, all the physical geography, map making, thematic maps, you name it, even the economic geography, which was boring as heck, understanding impacts of events and weather on society. Bingo, there it was. Music became a hobby, geography and weather started looking like it was going to become my career. What can you do with a degree in geography? You could be a city planner. You can work. You can go to graduate school and become a teacher. You can work for, you know, different government agencies doing mapping, surveying. You know, you could eventually go to meteorology if you want to. I mean, there's a lot of things you could do with that base degree, sure. But I wanted to do something immediately, so I did really well. Now we're into 1995, my last year in college. Still dating Rebecca, looking like we're going to get married. She's going into nursing and doing really well. And it's almost time to graduate. My professors, everybody knew, you know, my love for hurricanes, etc. And the internet was really starting to take off in 1995. And I learned about this guy named Dr. William Gray from Colorado State University and various websites where I could get almost real-time weather information at the UNCW library. I didn't have a computer yet. And I got my degree in geography in the summer of 1995, early summer, I guess it was May or whatever, and went to work through a placement program from the university at a place called Wilmington Industrial Development Incorporated. Fancy name for an economic development firm whose job it is to get business and industry to locate in North Carolina, in Southeast North Carolina, in Wilmington, the Cape Fear region. My boss, a gentleman named Robert Dunn, hired me as an intern, $15 an hour, which in 1995, man, that was like, but it was a temporary position. There was a set amount of, it was not whatever, it was a temp job. He wanted me to write a report, and this is a true story. My job, I graduated on a Saturday. Monday morning, I went to work at this place called Wilmington Industrial Development. The job task, oh, you got a degree in geography. You're into hurricanes. Perfect. I need you to write a report about hurricane return periods in Southeast North Carolina so that I can show it. This is Rob Dunn talking. You know, this is what he asked me to do. So I can show it to prospective business and industry decision makers and have them relocate or locate, whatever, build, move into, you name it, buildings in Southeast North Carolina, specifically the Cape Fear region, and grow our economy. I was like, cool, sounds great, right up my alley. I knew how to write, you know, man, I got a degree, I'm a college graduate, let's do it. So I got to work, I hit the internet, and I mean, I worked my butt off. This was right up my alley. I am now doing something professionally using my degree about hurricanes. Now, the report that I gave him 6 weeks later didn't sit very well because it was basically, hey, Rob, here's your report. Kind of turns out, and I mean, I knew this all along, but to put it in paper and using maps and pictures and graphs and charts and whatever, you know, Rob, we got a problem. North Carolina, specifically the Cape Fear region, has a hurricane problem. Turns out, it's cyclical. And even more so, it looks like it's getting ready to come back. So, not sure how you're going to use this to lure business and industry here, but there's this guy named Dr. Bill Gray from Colorado State University. Wait a minute. Rob, yeah. Colorado? What? Yeah, Colorado State. Don't ask me. It's just where it is. Atmospheric sciences. Anyway, he has this thing about, you know, West African rainfall and something called an Atlantic multi-decadal oscillation. And basically, we go through periods when there's lots of hurricanes and periods when there's not so many and they're just more random. And it looks like we're getting ready to get into a period where there are going to be more of them and more concentrated, especially on the East Coast. What do you want to do? And it didn't make him happy. And he's like, damn, like, I can't tell this to people. What about tornadoes? It's like, yeah, we don't really have too many tornadoes here. Like, he really wanted some good news. No, we really don't have too many tornadoes in the Wilmington area, except those that are spawned from the outer bands of hurricanes. There is a mini tornado alley, kind of through the I-95 corridor, from northeast South Carolina up through Raleigh, Fayetteville, exiting somewhere around northeast North Carolina. There's more tornadoes there than in Wilmington. That was basically all I could give him. He said, all right, well, thanks for nothing. Yeah, basically. I don't know what he ever did with that report, to be honest with you. So that was it. I thought, wow, these bleeping people. Remember that line, I'm not going to use the word, but you know the line I'm talking about, from A Few Good Men, from Jack Nicholson. And he's on the stand and he goes, you bleeping people. And you know the word, and it's not bleeping. That's what I thought. I thought, man, you bleeping people have no clue about our hurricane history, do you? And no clue as to what's coming. Because I saw the research from Dr. Gray and our history, and I read a lot from Jay Barnes and others. And I mean, I really put my degree to use right out of the gate. And it really made the light bulb go off. I am going to start a company. And the company's job will be to educate these bleeping people about hurricanes, one way or the other. And, you know, if we ever get a hurricane hit here, fine, I'll study its impacts. But I am going to be a hurricane expert. I've got a degree in geography. I might as well do that. So help me God. And that's what I did. So that summer, I went to an attorney and I got a business and I called it Hurricane Maps Enterprises, a sole proprietorship. And the mission statement was to create hurricane awareness as a consultant and as a researcher to help better prepare communities for hurricanes through research, education, and awareness. And my objective was to become probably the only private hurricane consulting firm in the nation. You had the government, you have engineering firms that do hurricane stuff, like there's one in Tallahassee I know of called PBS&J, Post Buckley Shoe and Jernigan, I think, and they do engineering evacuation stuff. That's different. I'm talking about specifically, you got private weather companies, I understand that, AccuWeather, the Weather Channel. I mean, literally a hurricane-specific company outside the government. That was going to be me. And that's what I did. I started the company in the summer of 1995. Well, company, it's not incorporated, but it's a sole proprietorship, my business. And I got to work. And the rest, as they say, is history. So there you go. That's the beginning. That is the first fairly large chunk. Now, we covered from, you know, 1970 to 1995 in a fairly short amount of time here, however long I've been yapping. But that's the beginning. And from there, a lot of things happened. And that's what we will talk about in future episodes. So, 1995, that's it. I was going to get married in 1996. We'll talk about all this in future episodes, of course, but my future was in front of me. I was ambitious. I had a lot of energy and a lot of zeal. I met with different emergency management people. Dan Summers, one of them here in New Hanover County, very much behind me, encouraged me, would help any way he could. I met with him often. I met with Jeff Harden, the meteorologist at WECT, the NBC affiliate here in Wilmington, numerous occasions. George Elliott, who was a meteorologist here as well. He went on to work at the Weather Channel, by the way. Other emergency management people, Sandy Sanderson up in Dare County. If you guys know him, he's legendary. And just, you know, sank my teeth into it as best I could. Watched the Weather Channel more than ever before. Learned everything I could and was ready to go. Ready to take this business and do something with it that was going to be innovative, impactful, and different. And be the premier hurricane expert outside of the typical organizations, like I mentioned, the Weather Service, AccuWeather, the Weather Channel, whatever, I was going to be that hurricane guy, you know, in the United States. And I, you know, just, I was so ready to go. Believe me, I dreamed about it. I obsessed over it. So that's where we'll leave off. Summer of 1995, just one little quick tidbit as we wrap it up there. As 1995 progressed, that job was 6 weeks, like I said, with Wilmington Industrial Development. I started the business, you know, had to figure out what I was going to do. My first idea was to create a hurricane tracking chart that was unlike anything else out there. I wanted to make one that was the size of a movie poster because I knew if I was into the weather, my goodness, you got a company called the Weather Channel on cable that has millions of subscribers, you know, cable does, and they watch the Weather Channel religiously. Everybody knew who Jim Cantore was. There has to be a need for a really kick-butt hurricane tracking map, a poster size. Like the movies, I wanted something that left a big impact. You know, and like movies, hurricanes have a trailer, right? With, oh, there's a hurricane coming. It's coming soon. And then it's released. The hurricane is here. And then there's the story afterwards, how the hurricane affected the economy. Very much like a movie. The promotion, the happening, and then the money that it made. And in the course of a hurricane, it's the money that it cost, right? And so a very similar metaphorical comparison there. I wanted to treat hurricanes with the respect of a major motion picture. It's a big deal. Let's talk about it. Let's get it out there. And that was going to be my first project. Produce a big hurricane tracking poster, cover the whole Atlantic Basin, all the way out to the coast of Africa. I was going to do that. How was I going to do that? That's what we'll cover in the next episode next week. So late in the summer, my job was up. My internship finished. I did my report, for better or for worse. Sorry, Rob, for the bad news, but we all know what happens from there. The Atlantic Basin did turn warmer. The AMO flipped to positive. We had a very busy hurricane season. 19 named storms. Yeah, it happened. Bill Gray was correct. My report was correct. And I tell you what, everything else, I could not have been in a better location because of what would happen next. And we'll cover that in the next episode. All right? Thank you for tuning in. I do appreciate it more than you know. This whole thing with Patreon, your support, your encouragement, you know, I've done this for a long time now, more than 23 years. I mean, I got my degree in 1995, so we're talking about a good amount of time here, going back to when I was a child, and look at everything we've accomplished. You know, like I say, you think you know the story. We're going to really get into those stories with this episode, these episodes, including this episode, to start all that. And you being there listening really means a lot to me. I appreciate it. You're more than welcome to share the link to this if you want to. However, you know, I'm not really making it available to the public. It is an exclusive benefit to being a supporter. But if you know people that you think would enjoy this, you may share it if you can figure out how to do that. You can download it and share it. I don't mind. And maybe you can encourage them to also support what I'm doing and our collective effort on Patreon and our crowdfunding. Because at the end of the day, you guys here many decades later, well, not too many, but after I started all this, it's more than two though, you're helping to make it possible. You really are. Your financial support, it's very similar to public radio and similar to being a nonprofit organization without the nonprofit organization bookkeeping headaches that you have to go through. You are supporting something that's important to you, and that means a lot to me, my family, all of us, and it helps me to be able to do something like this for you to benefit from. So I appreciate it. All right, so that's it for this episode. Stories from the Hurricane Highway, Chapter 1, in the beginning. That's a wrap. I am Mark Suddeth, HurricaneTrack.com. I look forward to talking to you again next week.